I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by digital media. Here in Los Angeles, opening week of the NBA season, Staples Center on Wednesday night, the Lakers open up with the Houston Rockets, and D'Angelo Russell returns for his second year running the Lakers, number two overall pick in last year's NBA draft, coming off a tremendous preseason. I sat down with D'Angelo to talk about his growth, the pressure of playing in LA, the comparisons that come with the Laker uniform, and the bond and relationship he's already built with new Lakers coach Luke Walton.
He's been great. We talk all the time. We text any time of the day. I could talk to him about a play or about anything, and he's always been open to it. So he's been great.
So let's do it. Here's D'Angelo Russell. Welcome in D'Angelo Russell, the second year guard of the Lakers, the number two overall pick last year, and now back after a very good preseason, back for the opening night here on Wednesday in LA. D'Angelo, how are you?
I'm great, man. Excited for the kickoff of the season. Game tomorrow, so just really looking forward to it.
D'Angelo, you think back 1 year to getting ready for opening night last year as a rookie. What do you know now that you didn't know then about this league, about what it takes?
First off, it would be just knowing what I was getting myself into. You know, going into the rookie season, you go through the combine, the summer league. You go through so much before you actually get your opportunity to put on that real jersey. So it's like before just training and working out, it was working on your jump shot, working on finishing, working on your body. It was so much you work and you start to work on. And then going into your second season, it's like, okay, I know where I'm getting my shots from, so I can really capitalize on that. I know how my body frame helped me get to the rim or stuff like that, so I knew what to work on going into the second season. I feel like that was the best thing for me.
D'Angelo, it's hard, especially at your position. It is a hard league to be a 19-year-old point guard in the NBA. I mean, there's probably never been a better – I'm not sure in the history of the league there's ever been more great point guards than there are now, and they just kind of keep coming at you one after another. What was that like mentally as a rookie? Because you're trying to get your bearings, you're trying to figure it out, and here comes Chris Paul, here comes Westbrook, here comes Lillard. What is that like at that age?
It's always definitely a confidence builder. You know, you're playing against these top guards every night, but you don't want to be one of the guys that has to worry about the next guy. So when you ask those three guys you just named about, D'Angelo Russell, they're probably like, okay, who is that? You know, so slowly I want to develop into that guard to where you're asking guys, like, put me in that category, and I have a long way to go, but that's the main goal. So as far as being a rookie and going through that, I feel like it got easier because you played against those guys three or four times a year. So every time you played against them, it got easier. You start to know more. You start to expect what you didn't expect the first time and stuff like that. So it just got easier, honestly.
With Luke Walton coming in here, D'Angelo, from the very beginning, what was the first conversation you had with him? And what's sort of been the consistent theme of how he's dealt with you, how you built a relationship with him?
The relationship's been great, honestly. He's been, before he came onto the team, everybody that I talked to that wasn't on the team said that he was a great dude. He's going to definitely guide you and lead you to what you want, where you want to go. He's going to give you the freedom at the same time. So I feel like that's when I play my best, when I have that type of guidance. But he's been great. We talk all the time. We text any time of the day. I could talk to him about a play or about anything, and he's always been open to it. So he's been great.
What you've had with him so far on the structure and sort of knowing what he wants out of you and what he expects out of the point guard, does it make you look back last year and sort of see what you didn't have or what you were missing at times to feel like when you're playing through mistakes, when you're being as a young player, and if you don't feel like you're getting your mistakes corrected or you don't have, there's not a vision and that's sort of laid out for you, is it more stark now that you have Luke versus what it was like as a rookie with Byron?
Yeah, and then again, I feel like Byron, he did that to a certain extent as far as that guidance and then keeping you on a leash at the same time. But with Luke, it's more of a, gives you the free range from the start, and he realizes it's all new to him, so he's realizing what guys can do and what they can't, what their strengths are, and he's done a great job of putting guys in their position to do their strengths. And as far as being the point guard, that's the hardest thing to figure out. And he, from day one, he's always told me to shoot the ball. If someone goes under the screen, shoot the ball. If you're open, shoot the ball. You have to be aggressive. I know you like to pass this and that, but you have to be aggressive. And just from that conversation alone, I've always had that aggressive mentality, and the game's been so much easier for me just because last year my mentality was pass first, shoot second, because I was trying to be the point guard and thinking that being the point guard, you have to get the most assists. You have to get guys going. And at a certain extent you do, but being aggressive is what's going to open that up, you know? So a lot of guys in this league are successful that don't really shoot the ball, but they're still aggressive and they're getting to where they want to go and then making that play. And since then, Luke's really, he's really helped guide me throughout that point.
Feeling like you have someone who sort of has empowered you with the team, and it seems like Luke has at every turn said, hey, D'Angelo's our leader. We're playing through him, guys. What has that meant for you? You didn't have that last year, and you know, you sort of, as you go on, you earn it more and more, but how has he sort of opened that door for you here with the whole group that he's really sort of turned the ball over to you?
He hasn't necessarily said that to the team, but it's more just little things. When we bring it in at the huddle, it's like, well, we got point guard, you know, and he's talking to me, and I'm like, oh, we got team on three, you know? So it's just like a sense of urgency of just little things like that. It's never been a sit everybody down, hey, D'Angelo's our guy. We got it. It's mm-hmm. never been like that, and I wouldn't want him to do that. But it's more, at the end of the day, you have to earn it. So if you have that credibility and you're earning it, guys will respect your voice more. And so when I kind of speak now, people kind of listen and they kind of look for me for guidance if they don't know a play. Like, that's the best feeling for me. Like, because I know last year, if I didn't know a play or if somebody didn't know a play, they couldn't come to me and ask me because I was the point guard and I just didn't know. So I couldn't. It was my first year, my first go around. I'm worried about so many other things, not where you're supposed to be. You know, being a point guard your first year is so hard. And then this year, I've developed that chemistry with guys to where if they don't know they can come to me because mm-hmm. I know. And I'm just so focused this year as far as just leading the best way I can and performing the best way I can to help this team be the best it can be.
D'Angelo, I remember sitting with you before the draft 2 years ago. We were up in Thousand Oaks and we had lunch. You were getting ready for, you had just gone to the combine, and you really wanted the Lakers to take you at number two. You wanted to play here. You wanted to play with Kobe at that time. You wanted to be part of this organization. You look back now to that kid who was there and thought he knew what it would be like here. Did you know? Did you really know? You look back, did you really have any idea of what it all meant? How hard it would be here? How hard it can
no.
be here?
I didn't know. First of all, I didn't know it was Kobe's last year at that time. So when I realized it was Kobe's last year, so many more things started to play his part as far as his farewell tour and stuff like that. So you didn't. I mean, we definitely tried to win. Like, every game was a winning game, but at this league, it's so hard to win when you don't have a group of guys that have grown together. You know, when you just throw guys randomly anywhere, it's gonna take some time. And we had so many new faces and just everything was new, so it wasn't going to click right away, and it never clicked. So it was hard to have that high of expectations for the Lakers when we were all new and we just didn't have that rapport with each other. So
how about two last year with Kobe D'Angelo? He didn't practice a lot. You know, he was at a point in his career physically where he just wasn't going to practice, and so it makes it harder to have guys playing games. And there are veteran teams in this league where they don't practice much at all.
Right.
But a young team, you need to be out. You do it. You got guys physically who can do it every day. And then you had one guy at the very end of his career. What was the challenge like of that? Of, you know, really, like, mostly when you played with him was on the court during a game, and you really didn't have sort of the practice time to build that chemistry. What was the challenge of that?
It was hard. You know, it was hard. But once again, you knew he was a guy in this league that you knew he was going to perform when the lights came on. So if he wanted to sit out practices or a few practices, it was like he earned that. You know, he's a veteran in this league. He earned that. So we had to figure it out. The hardest thing, I forgot who told me, but once I got drafted, they were like, you know, the hardest thing about playing alongside Kobe was going to be realizing once you call a play and he gets the ball in his hand, what are you going to do after he gets the ball? What are you going to do to play off of him and still be effective on the offensive end. So that helped me, because if I called a play, I knew it was his show. So when he got the ball, it was more like a cut off the ball. Help me move without the ball. Help me say forget the play and just keep moving. Give him an outlet, you know. So that helped me. So whenever the play breaks down now, we don't have any Kobe's around. So when the play breaks down now, I still know how to play off that. I got that experience from last year. So
what do you remember from that? What will you take from that last night of the season against Utah? His 60 points. What, when you think back to that night, what do you think about? What memory? Is there a moment of that night that stays with you?
It was a movie, man. Honestly, it was a movie. I see footage of, like, other teams. They were just watching the game. They were just watching it on their TV. People were telling me how they were watching it on the planes when they were traveling. Just little stuff like that. And I was actually on the court with them, and I didn't feel. I mean, honestly, we weren't involved at all. So it was like we were running around with, like, chickens with our heads cut off trying to get them the ball. And the craziest thing that really stood out to me was the fans, like how he controlled the fans. Like, if anybody got the ball besides him, it was like boo. Like, even if you were a Laker, like, we were like, here, come take that, we don't want it, we don't want it. And we were trying to get him, we wanted him to go out with a bang, and he was a G for that, man. He went out 60 points. That was crazy. It was a movie night. I'm glad I got to be on the floor, but I wish I was on the sideline being able to watch too, because he really put on a show that night.
What do you remember about their guys? They were already out of the playoff picture before that game played. They didn't.
It was like one game in, and I think Houston won
right
to get them.
So
out.
It didn't matter for the Jazz. But I just remember those guys. I was sitting there courtside too, and like, I mean, you guys were running, like, you know, you were setting screens for them. You were throwing guys on the floor. You were they were going to let you guys do whatever you wanted that night. I remember those guys just being exasperated. Did anybody say anything during the game? Did their guys say anything like, are we gonna, what are we, the, like, Washington Generals here tonight?
Yeah, it was more, their eyes were just as big as ours. Like, we were like, whoa. Like, I've heard so much and seen so much of Kobe, this Kobe, that. Saw it in practice a little bit. Some games he scored 30 and quick 30, like, and then he'd sit down the fourth quarter, little stuff like that. But when you're growing up and you see Kobe Bryant's 60-point performance, Kobe Bryant 80-point performance, Kobe Bryant just hit 10-3, stuff like that, you're like, dang, that's crazy. I couldn't imagine if I was there. So getting the opportunity to really be there and witness him put on that show was like, it was crazy, man. Like, I really wish I could sit down and just, like, was on the sideline and just watch it. Or if I was a fan sitting courtside, just watching that. It was crazy. And then another thing is we didn't beat the Jazz all season. We played them, like, twice in preseason, four times throughout the season, and we didn't beat them not one time. And that last game, we beat them, and it was Kobe did his part.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by digital media. Find your voice. It's the MMQB Podcast with Peter King.
This is about 5 years ago. There we are at dinner. Donald Trump is telling one of his million stories about his beautiful acreage and his golf course and all his business. And right behind me and my wife and everybody else, some 6'4" brunette walks in the room. And he goes, wow, stops telling the story. She's beautiful. We all looked at her, then looked back at him. He finished his story.
For the rest of this conversation with Rich Eisen, please search the MMQB Podcast with Peter King to listen and subscribe.
Hey, D'Angelo, sit tight for a minute so I can tell my listeners about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a very long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it, too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if the ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it all the time because it's simple and it works. Stevie Nicks at Madison Square Garden, it's coming up. I'll be there. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They'll show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. Now, listen to this next part because it's very important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you have to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So go support SeatGeek like they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J, today. Now back to our guest, D'Angelo Russell.
Let me ask you this, D'Angelo. When you play for the Lakers, almost any other team in the league, they compare you to the guys you're competing against. So, like, if you're Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, they're comparing you to Chris Paul or Kyrie Irving. Or when you play for the Lakers, are you more compared to the guys in history? Well, how do you stack up as a point guard to that guy? Do you sense even in a year here it's different here? They compare you to the history here, not so much to other guys in the league.
When you're in L.A., all you hear is L.A. When we're in L.A., I don't hear anything about the Celtics. I don't hear anything about the Bulls. You know, little stuff like that. So it's like me being in L.A., I'm going to hear so much about being compared. They're not going to compare me to Kyrie or to Isaiah Thomas because they're so focused on the Lakers. You know, they want to bring back the magic moments. They want to bring back all the great people that have been through here. They want to keep bringing back those memories. So they speak about it as much as they possibly can as far as fans, media, right, whatever it is.
Because the question is, like, there hasn't been too many breaks in history where another all-time great hasn't come in or more than one Hall of Fame-type player. And so the question's always, not is D'Angelo Russell going to be a really good NBA guard, not is he going to be an all-star guard. They want to know, is D'Angelo Russell going to be an all-time great? Because that's what we're used to here.
I can't predict the future, but
But do you feel that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the atmosphere has been so heated since day one, you know, just because you got so many Laker greats. And then you have so many players that have came through, and it's been like a passing of a torch. Magic, Kobe, you know, it's always been somebody that's been the face that has brought the team to the expectations that the fans want or that the legacy the franchise has been a part of. So I think it's why it's so unique and nice that because we don't have expectations. Everybody knows that it's a rebuilding process. It's going to take some time, but it's up to us to make it happen right away. If we want to have it right away, we can do it. Like, I feel like we can make the playoffs this year. I feel like we can be a team to sneak some wins against some top teams in this league that they weren't expecting us to win. You know, as far as the last few years, we weren't capable of doing that. So it's gonna be a fun year. I'm really excited for it.
There's always the great Laker players will come back and talk, but I know I had Jerry West on the podcast last week, and I know Jerry just came in and talked to your group. He's pretty good in that setting, right?
Yeah.
What was his message? What stayed with you from him coming in here?
It was real gritty, just the grit that he brought with his message, as far as coming from nothing and really playing for his teammates and his competitive nature, willing to just go out full brawl for his teammates. That was really the message behind it, just how he came from nothing and he made it something. So,
you know, you grew up, you know, not too far, you know, Jerry's a West Virginia guy. You're a Kentucky guy. You didn't always see this coming. You weren't always that guy. You were a big recruit, but people didn't necessarily see you as a one-and-done guy coming out. You think back to your freshman year in Louisville. You played for Doug Bibby, who was Rajon Rondo. He had been Rajon Rondo's high school coach, and Rondo was, you know, had been the last great guard out of Kentucky. What was it like as a freshman in high school in Louisville when people were making those comparisons to Rondo for you? What do you remember about being a, you know, essentially what, a 14-year-old kid at that point? Like, what did you think was ahead of you in basketball at that point? Did you see this?
It honestly gave me the confidence, because I remember when Rondo would come back to the city and play against us and scrimmage against us. I never played against anybody that was as good as at that level, you know, as good as him. And when he would come back and play good as, he would just be so nonchalant and just dominate us by just playing around, like not really trying. And I was like, man, I want to be like that. And Doug Bibby, he would always talk about what Rondo did when he was in high school and where he was mentally and stuff like that. So it helped me. It made me want to think and really study his game. So I remember in class or like before class or whatever, I would watch highlight tapes of him just trying to really study his game before practice and then going to practice be trying stuff that I've just seen him do. So it was just, I give a lot of credit to Rondo because he would come support me and watch me play and practice against him, play one-on-one, full courts, all type of things just to get me, just try to get me ahead of the next guy. And I remember every time he would come watch me play, I would never perform the way I wanted to perform. I would always be like, all right, Rondo's here. I gotta, you know, and never do what I wanted to do. And I remember the last time he saw me play was in high school and I put on a show and it was because I didn't know he was there, you know, and it was so much pressure he puts on because it's not a lot of guys that make it from where I'm from. So he put so much pressure on guys to want to make it to where he was at as far as being a pro player. I mean, he won some rings and all, and not a lot of guys do that, but he's one of the few that did, and he's from the city. So he really put on and paved the way for guys like me and a lot of upcoming guys that are from the city. I know a lot of guys in the upcoming that we're trying to pave the way for them, to just give them that motivation. When you think of Louisville, Kentucky, you think of Muhammad Ali. In any sport, there's a few people that have made it out. But when it comes to basketball, you know Rondo, you know D'Angelo Russell. So that's the main focus right now as far as from the city.
He's not easy to get to know. He's not easy to build a relationship with. He's does his own thing. Did you feel like you got to know him very well at that point, or was more just a guy you played against, you got in the court and played pickup with?
I think it's because I was in the position he's in as far as people kept comparing me to him, or Bibby just kept throwing me at him, telling him to take me under his wing. And he was just like, he didn't say it, but it was really self-explanatory. Like, I don't know this kid. Who is he? Every time I see him play, he don't do nothing. Like, why would I just give him my respect? So I had to perform. And honestly, it took me, in college, I did my thing or whatever, but it was when we played the Kings, the first time we played them, I was like, dang, I'm on the court with Rondo. And I knew him way before, but I was actually on the court competing. And I seen how he slowed the game and just really controlled the whole game. And I was like, dang. So, and the next time we played him, I had a little breakout game or whatever, and that's when I felt like, yo, I can play with this guy. I can compete. I'm supposed to be here. And from that point on, our conversations are different. Like when I talk to him, it's like I'm asking him about a play or what he saw here, not what I can do or,
right,
you know,
what's like, it like in the NBA?
Yeah, like not a fan type question, you know, so. It's all about earning your stripes, I guess, in this league.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
D'Angelo, give me a minute to tell my listeners about Harry's Razors. Guys, you want to look sharp, and one way to look sharp is to make sure you have a good shave. I know I have that great shave because of Harry's Razors. I will buy anything generic, anything. I don't need name brand anything. Ever. But I gotta have good razors. I've always been that way. Harry's 5-blade razors include a softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide, a trimmer blade for hard to reach places, a lubricating strip, and a textured handle for more control when it's wet. I feel like I have like a European sports car with Harry's razors. Harry's blades are just $2 each compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And how are they able to do that? Well, they own the factory in Germany where they make the blades. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they'll send you their popular free trial set, which comes with a razor, 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. Get your free trial set when you subscribe and just pay $3 for shipping. And I have a special offer just for my listeners. Enter code WOJ, W-O-J at checkout, to get a post-shave balm for free with your order. So go to harrys.com, harrys.com right now, and enter promo code WOJ at checkout to claim your free trial set and post-shave balm. That's harrys.com, code WOJ.
You made the decision after your freshman year to go to Montverde in Florida.
to play for Kevin Boyle. Leaving home, first of all, why did you leave Louisville? We see a lot of great players go to some of these national programs. What's that like at 15 years old to move away? And it's almost like a college experience. You're on a campus and you're playing basketball for a national program. How did you handle that at that age?
It was so hard, man. It really molded me into the person I am today. As far as when I went to college, it was two times easier. When I really moved out here and lived by myself, it was two times easier just because I went to Montverde and I really valued growing up. You know, I was a kid that played all the time, never got in trouble for crazy stuff like stealing and little stuff. I never got in trouble for that. I was always a kid that got in trouble for playing too much. And when I went to Montverde, it forced me to grow up. I was 14 years old. I had to do my own laundry. I had to do dorm chores every morning. I had to shave. My best behavior in school, it was like that. You'll get kicked out and be replaced by the next guy. So it was the greatest thing that ever happened for me. And like I said, it was the hardest thing. It was times where I was like, Dad, I'm coming home. I'm not going back there. But my dad was like, nah, man, you got to stick it out. And summertime, this summer, I had like all my guys from Montverde that I was just cool with, that I kept in touch with. We all just packed up in my house. And we just were reminiscing. They were here for a few weeks. We just reminisced. Like we were sleeping on the floor, like right next to each other, just like in the old day. Like it was the best feeling ever, just to say I graduated and to go through what I went through to get through it.
Kevin Boyle, I mean, he is going to coach you hard. He's really one of the best high school coaches in the country. But you came in as, you were essentially like the fourth guard on a high school team, right? Mm-hmm. And you weren't playing much.
No, I wasn't. And I had to earn everything. And I remember the same thing. The conversations that me and him had when I was a sophomore were like, you're not good enough. Go sit down. That was the conversation. Like, I couldn't talk to him. His son was on the team. Me and him hated each other. We competed. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I knew my senior year that if I keep this relationship with my coach, I'll eventually earn what I want. So my sophomore year, he wouldn't talk to me. It was like, watch out, man, just go sit down. So my senior year, we were a stacked team, and everybody that was like, was somebody got kicked off the team except for me and Ben Simmons, as people know, and a few other guys. We were on the team, but a lot of guys got kicked off because they just couldn't really handle it. And I never played point guard my whole life. And that was my first year playing point guard. When I went to college, I was recruited as a point guard, you know, and the conversations from sophomore year to senior year turned into, what do you want to run? You tell me. What do you see out there? All right, let's do that. Mm-hmm. You want to pick and roll every time? All right. D'Angelo, he has the ball. You guys do what he say. And it was so different, but I earned it. And so from that point on, I knew what it took. I knew what it meant to work for something.
What was it like playing with Ben Simmons at that point? Was he as close of a friend as you had on that team?
Yeah, I mean, he was close, but it was different because he came my junior year. He was a sophomore, and I just remember when he first came came to practice. He just kept dunking and getting putbacks. First scrimmage, he was just getting putbacks and finishing everything. He could move. He was 6'9". He could move. And our power forward at the time was Devin Williams, he went to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what he's doing now, but he went to West Virginia. He was a bulky dude, rebound. I thought he was going to be a pro. You know, I thought he was going to be a pro one-and-done guy. And I remember Devin Williams came to us and was like, he's not taking my spot. And sure enough, Ben just kept working at it and kind of solidified that spot. And we went to the national tournament, and we won that, and Ben really stood out. Me and Ben, we really stood out that tournament coming back to from my senior year, his junior year. And that was crazy. That was one of the craziest years because we just dominated the whole season. We won it again. And I just remember in practice staring at this dude like, this dude going to be a pro and people don't even know about him. Just looking him up and down like, man. And then it comes out that I get drafted. The following year, he gets drafted and it's just like, man, I didn't see me getting drafted. I saw him, but I didn't see me getting drafted. It was just a whirlwind of, we were just in high school the other day. So
you go to Ohio State, D'Angelo. Did it ever occur to you when you showed up at campus in August or whenever you got there that you'd be one and done?
No. No, I remember Paul Biancardi. He was my guy. I used to talk to him all the time. And he was running the really, he was one of the guys that were into the rankings and stuff that
he's a recruiting analyst.
Yeah, I really respected his opinion. And he would say like, yo, this guy's better than you, man. I'm not even, he would tell me and I'd be like, all right, that's somebody I need to work and compete against this summer. And when I remember going into college, he was like, D'Angelo, I'm telling you, you go there, think about unpacking your bags, getting comfortable. Maybe 2 or 3 years, you'll get your opportunity and you'll be a top five draft pick. I'm telling you. And I was like, man, that sounds good. Like, I didn't even think of one and done. And I never thought throughout the season of being a one and done guy. And it was so crazy that throughout the season, I would just prepare myself for every game, every practice, and just think of dominating it every time. And the game started to come around and it just started getting easier and easier for me. I started becoming like a ESPN talk about. Like, every time I look at ESPN, they were kind of talking about me, and I was just like, wow. They talk about a pass I made or how many points I scored or we were winning so many games, stuff like that. And then our football team was doing it too, so that was kind of helping Ohio State's publicity all around. And I looked up, my dad started talking to me about I had to get an agent and you want to enter the draft, this and that. I'm like, enter the draft? Like, I had no idea this was coming, and it went by so fast that I had tunnel vision that I never once thought about being an NBA player so early that I never thought about it. And that helped me stay focused throughout the whole process of just taking one day at a time.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
D'Angelo, we'll get back to our conversation in a minute, but I have to ask my listeners a question. If you could get 3 home-cooked meals for free, would you sign up for it? Well, of course you would. All you need to do is remember my name, Woj. Simple enough. Now keep listening, and I'll tell you how to get those free meals. We all know there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal, and no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients and all of it right to your door. Plus, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Now listen up here, because this is the part about the 3 free meals I was telling you about earlier. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/woj. Think about that. That's 3 free meals just by typing in my name. Once again, that's blueapron.com/woj, W-O-J. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now let's get back to our guest, the Lakers' D'Angelo Russell. When you break out like that at that age, it's very hard if you're going to be a top 5 pick, and people could argue whether you were going to go second or third or fourth. And really, even at that time, people thought number 2 to the Lakers was a reach. Like, it, you came on late and sort of took that spot, but you were a top 5 guy, top 4. It's really hard to say no to that. Even if there was a part of you saying, hey, I like Ohio State, I like college, I could do this another year. Is there like almost a feeling of like, I gotta go. Like, this is what you're supposed to do.
It was so hard leaving Ohio State. I mean, I give a lot of credit to Dad Mott and his staff. It was so hard for me because they went through hell to get me, you know, to recruit me. Because I was so big on, I gotta pick the right school. I could have went to Kentucky's or Louisville's, all the schools that were people talked about. But they did a great job of just showing that loyalty from day one, and that led me to Ohio State. But I never once thought about cheating the process as far as coming into college thinking, hey, I'm about to play like a one-and-done player. I unpacked my bags, you know. I was like, let's be here. Let's make a name. Sooner or later, it was my name on the draft board. And knowing that I could be a top-5 pick, the money's going up every year, but being a top-5 pick, knowing that my mom doesn't have to worry about food stamps anymore, knowing that my dad doesn't have to worry about the next time I'm getting a college check, I gotta give him some for him to, you know what I'm saying, get diapers for my little sister. I don't have to worry about that no more. It's so much that goes into once I, if I make it, I get to repay my family from the heart, the school shoes, the school supplies, and all that that they've bought throughout the years for me. So I knew once I made it, I was once I had the opportunity, I had to go, because that opportunity is once in a lifetime. But it was in God's plan for me.
If they sent you to the rookie symposium, you went to that as a rookie, and they bring back this player, that guy, or this expert to talk about this. Knowing what you know, if somebody was in your shoes, you know, a guy who's going to be, could be a one and done kid going into college right now, great player. What do you know now that you tell those guys that, that you didn't understand then?
Don't cheat the process. I feel like the mentality as far as it's two ways you can go about this. The mentality of being top high school guy going into college, you can be like, all right, I'm one and done. So I'm going to treat this experience like it was one, and, like I'm a one and done guy. I'm not going to go hard every play because my coach knows I'm the best player. I'm not going to go to class because my coach knows he needs me. He's not going to sit me down because I'm not going to class. I'm not going to really get close with my teammates because I'm only going to be here for a few months and I'm leaving them. So I'm not going to, that's, if you go about it that way, that's when God sets in. That's when karma sets in. That's when people start to really recognize what type of person you are. And there's so much that goes into it. And I feel like the best thing for me was, like I said, unpacking my bags and really keeping my circle small. I got a lot of guys around me that keep my mentality just two steps ahead of the next guy. So I don't have to worry about it all the time. But not a lot of people have that. They don't have that role model. They don't have their parents around, their brothers around that can really keep them level-headed. So going into college, that was my mentality of just really getting to know my teammates, doing whatever my coach needed, going to class every day, not being late to class, just little stuff like that. And that added up. So when the NBA is coming around, because they do their research, when they coming around asking coaches, how's this guy? What type of player is he? This and that. They're going to speak the truth and tell them that he's a great guy. He was a scholar, because I was a scholar athlete. I made all A's and B's in college. It was so much that went into that. And that can go into being a pro. Guys coming in, getting drafted on 3-year, 4-year deals, they can easily be like, I'm going to get mine. And get it. Sometimes you're successful with it, but sometimes you can be like, I'm not worrying about the money right now. I'm a play and just let that take care of itself. And some guys get max contracts when they weren't even expecting that. Some guys go undrafted and sign max deals after 1 or 2 years, you know? So it's just all about your mentality. And I feel like going into college, your mentality has to be unpack your bags, get to know your teammates. Treat this experience like an everlasting experience. Don't treat it like you're only going to be there for a few months and you're gone. You got to treat it like you're going to be there for a while. And that's when the blessings start to come in.
D'Angelo, you went through the ringer last year. You had like a rookie year that was sort of like amplified by being in L.A. And, you know, some places you get covered by, you know, you got your local paper, media, and like the local TV stations. When you play for the Lakers and you're in LA, you're covered by TMZ and paparazzi. It's just a different existence here. Did being away from home, having to go through sort of like some stuff before you got to the NBA, feeling like you had to fend for yourself, like as a 14-year-old going to high school, did it play any role in sort of getting you through some of the times last year where you could really question, can I do this? Can I handle this barrage of stuff that's coming on me right now?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, that's all. I give all the credit to Montverde and Ohio State. Montverde, it was so hard for me to just stay focused and really handle adversity the right way at a 14-year-old kid, not playing and not being able to play with your teammates, knowing that you feel like you're wasting time. You feel like I could be in Kentucky playing against all my friends, putting on a show for the city, knowing that when it's time to go to college, probably won't be qualified. I probably won't be as good as I could possibly be as far as if I was going to a prep school playing against other top competition, getting all the recognition I want, becoming a McDonald's All-American, doing so much at that level, and then going into college. First of all, you going through college and going through high school, you gotta make the grades to qualify for college. If I was in Kentucky, I probably wouldn't have made the grades because it was so hard for me to just stay focused because I was at home. Everybody's telling me what I want to hear. probably didn't have to go to class if I didn't want to. It was so much that, that played its part. But I knew at prep school, I had to go to class. I had to do well on my ACT and SAT. I had to study for tests. I had to do that. I had to take it to another level. So it was so much adversity that set in. So going through, LA is a different animal, but once I got to this level, I kind of knew how to handle it. And my family knew how to handle it, because when I came complaining to them about the stuff I was going through in high school and college, they told me the same thing, like, stick it out. It'll be worth it at the end. So getting to this point, I went through so much adversity, not playing, starting to not playing, to not being able to shoot, not being able to compete, not being able to get the opportunity that I wanted. So it's just all adversity, and it really tests your true character. So
do you think last year, you know, people are watching, they want to see, not so much like stuff's going to happen when you're young. You do things and you go, okay, you learn from it. But I think people, when they're watching, they want to say, okay, how does this guy handle it when the adversity hits? Is he like just climbing back in bed, pulling the covers back over his head? Or is he walking out like, you showed staying power last year. You fought through the stuff. Was it harder than you imagined? Did you feel like, were there days last year you just said, can I do this?
Never. I know. It's crazy because I know where I come from. I know what type of family I have. It's so hard being a, growing up where I was, where I grew up at. So when you get to this, it's a challenge. Don't get me wrong, but it's not on the same level. Knowing where you have to, man, some days you got to eat cereal at night. You know, you might not have milk in the morning. Mm-hmm. Your mom driving you to school, she's working 2 to 3 jobs. Like, so that stuff's way harder than dealing with the media here, dealing with TMZ, bringing up issues that can really affect your mentality. Little stuff like that is like, it's just a smack on the wrist, you know? So when you know you come from that and you know how hard you work and you trust your ability and all this is just, it's just a movie. It's just a book. You're writing your story, but when you retire and it's all over, you're going to sit back and laugh at these moments. So I know that at the end of the day, that's how it's going to turn out.
The progress you've made in this preseason, people talk about confidence. You know, they'll watch you and say, hey, D'Angelo's playing with confidence. And I have always found, I think in whatever it is you do, I always think confidence comes from feeling like you're prepared, right? Is that what you felt more as much as anything this year, that you're being prepared better? And then you carry yourself differently and you play differently.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the coaching staff, all those guys have done a great job. My teammates, they've done a great job of just really, really guiding you. You say D'Angelo Russell's a leader. He's a leader. But you got guys like Lou Will. You got Luol Deng. You got Meta World Peace. You got all these guys that have been through it that really lead. They really know what they're talking about. It's so hard to be a leader in this league when you don't have the experience or the credibility, or you come in at the age of 19 and you have no clue what it takes.
No one's buying it when you're 19. It's hard to sell yourself as a leader, right?
So you can't. So you have to listen to those guys. So they've made it so easy for me. So I'm not worried. When I got guys like that are by my side really helping me be the leader that I want to be and just giving me they're feeding me the jewels, dropping the jewels on me every day in practice, I'm well prepared. So my thing is, I've only been in this league 1 year. This is my second year, and I've seen the progress. And hopefully you guys see the progress. So I can't imagine when I've been in for 4 or 5 years, 6, 7 years, if I'm that fortunate, and just the confidence and my whole demeanor and just how much I've grown since year one to year eight to year nine. And it's just going to be a wowing moment for me.
D'Angelo, great stuff, man. I appreciate you taking the time, and I'll see you out there tomorrow night against the Rockets.
Let's do it. I appreciate you, Laker fans. Hope we're going to have a great year. Not hope, we're going to have a great year, and just keep supporting us through everything. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate you too, Woj. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. I'd like to thank today's guest, Lakers guard D'Angelo Russell. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And be sure to subscribe to The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us on thevertical.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play. And you can now hear The Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the SiriusXM app on channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, SeatGeek, Harry's Razors, and Blue Apron. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.